Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you so much to Shanduko for that news update. There'll be more news at 7 o'clock. We kick off this particular Thursday with yet another weird law from around the world. This one comes to you courtesy of North Korea. You need approval to reside in the city's capital. So according to the government's laws, you need to request specific permission from the North Korean government if you wish to have Pyongyang as your place of residence. This is done in an effort to ensure that, I suppose, Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea, has the most powerful and successful people living in the capital of the country. Weird laws. Wonder why they exist. Don't make them up, but we'll keep finding them for you. You tune into the SFM Market Update with Money Web. And on the show today, we're going to be taking a look at results out of Clicks as well as Afrimat. We're going to speak to the CEO of Clicks around their full year's numbers, as well as the executive director at Afrimat around their half year numbers. Then we've got a conversation with the team at Standard Bank, taking a look at some interesting insights they've been able to observe around young professionals and their discretionary spend. And then we've got a conversation with the team at South African Breweries, taking a look at the impact of excise tax and illicit trade on the beer sector. And then we're going to wrap up the conversation with a small business conversation. We're going to be looking at an SME of the week, because that's what we do on Thursdays. This week's SME is a company called Stub. Stick around to find out what it is that they do.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
We kick off the show with a sense of market movements throughout the day and some other market developments. I'm joined on the line by VIP account manager at Prime XBT, Kiarabile Nonyana, to take a look at market movements and see what we make of them. Ntate Nonyana, lovely having you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. It seems as though the markets were in quite the panic earlier in the week, as we thought this was the end of the gold rally, and the gold price just came right back today off the back of possibly some global tensions and said, well, nobody said the rally was over.
Yeah, I think when you look at any technical view on the gold price, you stand to see that the bullish trend remains, because all the fundamental aspects which have driven the gold price still remain. There's still a lot of geopolitical tension. Inflation is not really dealt with. And as well, the safe haven demand is really what's still driving that gold price. I think the sell-off was just a bit of profit taking from a bit of risk from risk traders around the globe who are holding gold positions, especially levered gold positions.
Yeah, how much of that profit taking starts to come into consideration now that we are in uncharted territory on pretty much all of the markets? We're at all-time highs across the board, whether you're looking at equity markets, whether you're looking at markets like the gold price, the platinum pricing. At some point, investors then start to weigh up how much longer can this go, and I suppose then risk and profit-taking start to become more frequent.
I think when you're in a bullish trend, what you do see is cautious optimism. I think right now there's still a lot of caution optimism in terms of the risk on trade. As I wrote in a recent article, that the caution is really coming from the fact that usually gold is seen as the red flag indicator in global markets. And right now, it's been pulled on with other risk assets in favor of leaving the US dollar. So right across risk assets, from bonds to equities to commodities to digital assets, you're seeing quite right bullish risk on trade versus the US dollar, which is soft across the board since the beginning of the year.
Yeah, let's take a look at events out of the US. It is pretty much in the thick of earnings season. We've been getting numbers out of various companies. We got numbers out of Tesla quite recently, disappointing numbers by market standards. What do you make of some of the earnings numbers that have been coming out of the US? And do they point towards or do they give us a direction around how strong the US economy remains at the moment?
I think you can see it in the major banks' earnings more than anything else. I think when you juxtapose major bank earnings versus our banks, I mean, I think it's chalk and cheese. Why I say that is that the return on equity metrics of major banks in the US is quite rightly pathetic. But what they keep on doing is churn out earnings. And that's purely at the level of the fact that they have such big balance sheets that they can deploy capital into that economy. And looking at the fact that the Fed has stepped into the quantitative tightening cycle of theirs, what we can see is the Fed, when they hold their reserves, they don't necessarily mark to market these reserves on a consistent basis, meaning they can always come into that economy and really release excess liquidity into that economy. And you're seeing it in the major banks' earnings. When we come to the tech sector, I think it's a bit of hit and miss, where Apple has shown strong growth out of the Chinese economy with the new iPhone 17 sales. But then you looked at Netflix earnings, which saw quite rightly a good sell-off because of the subscriber numbers not coming down and there's been a lot of margin pressure. With Tesla's earnings, it's a bit of a hit and miss because they're getting a lot of competition outside of China, and they're not seeing a lot of traction in the Euro economy. So Tesla is, in my opinion, almost going into X growth.
So, Gia, do we then stick with the tech stocks? I mean, the Magnificent Seven have been all the rage in the US, and they've been driving a lot of the themes like the AI themes that we've been seeing coming out of global sentiment. If we are to look at equity markets and we're to look at which equity areas add value, we know that there's a huge upward cycle at the moment on local commodity counters because of the commodity prices. Is there still the tech conversation, and is it still as strong as it was before?
I was doing an analysis and looking at all fourth quarters since 1975. 75% of the time, the S&P 500 closes in positive territory going into the end of the year. So, I mean, if we had to take four coin tosses, three of them say that the S&P 500 will close in positive territory. And looking at the composite number of the Mag 7 in terms of index valuation, you have to believe that the AI trade is still really in play at the moment. Do I believe that other equity markets show better value than the Mag 7? Yes, I do. Right across Europe, in Asia, even locally, there's better value to be found. But as I say continuously to you, Jimmy, in our private conversation is follow the momentum. That's probably where you're going to be making money.
Speaking of momentum, before I let you go, Gia, the local markets, I had a look at the top 40. We haven't had a bearish month for the year 2025. I don't know if that has happened before in South African markets, or at least in recent history, but going into the tail end of the year, we are almost done with October. We've got 2 months, or maybe a month and a half, given how short December tends to be. Is this going to be potentially the first year we finish the year without a single red month on the top 40?
I think so. I mean, I recently wrote an article looking at the old market adage of sell in May and go away, and how that really translates into South African top 40. And you see quite a big divergence between Euro markets and the US markets, because the South African market always has a jittery May to December trade. So what I was particularly looking at is the strength and momentum drivers within the top 40 index, and looking at the fact that resources and materials have really done well for us, but you've seen quite a lag in industrial counters, especially those who have SA-based earnings. So what I'm saying is the top 40 index still has a lot of counters when you look at the length and breadth of its momentum drive that are still lagging the resource counters. There's still a lot more counters on our market that have more opportunity to go up. And I think that's what's given me conviction that the top 40 index and the JSE All Share will carry on producing returns going into November and December.
Follow the momentum. Don't try and predict the market, but rather wait for the market to tell you what it wants to do. I suppose that is where the key comes in from an investment point of view, at least from a trade perspective as well. I think we'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to Gia Willanonyana of Primex BT for joining us to take a look at market movements, market momentum, and perhaps even some of the earnings that have been coming out of the US and how they're influencing market sentiment.
Here's the thing about running a business. It needs constant connection with reliable communication between you, your staff, and customers. That's why the right partnership matters. Get Cloud PABX from Telkom Business, a unified communication solution that makes connecting easy from just 161 rands per month.
This summer, your business deserves the best. Visit telkom.co.za/business for deals that keep your business online all the time. T's and C's apply. Telkom Business. Possible begins here.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
The time was 8 a.m. this morning when the Clicks Group Limited business released their full year's results for the financial year ended 31 June 2025. A consistent year by all metrics, growing group turnover by about 5.3%, increasing return on equity to 49.2%, and even increasing dividends by 14.2%. I'm joined on the line by the Group CEO Bertina Engelbrecht to take a look at the performance of the business and see what we make of it. Bertina, lovely to have you on the show, as always. More of the same, it seems. Last year, when you and I caught up around the full year's numbers, it was an increase in turnover of 6% from the previous year, with a return on equity up to 42%. This year, the figures are in, and it looks as though the business just keeps being consistent.
It's an amazing business. You know, I'm looking forward. 2028, we turn the ripe old age of 60 years old. And I think there are very, very few businesses that can really talk to the track record of continued and sustained success that the Clicks Group has had. We are super fortunate and highly privileged.
2028 might be the 60th birthday, but this year marked the 30th anniversary of the Club Card, something that has really revolutionized the loyalty program landscape in South Africa. I see the Club Card membership now, that's grown from last year as well. We were around 12.1 last year. We're closer to 13 million members this year. Clearly, there's still a huge demand for that loyalty program, and with 7.5 billion rand being returned to customers through that program, it shows that it works.
Absolutely works. You know, it's people really envy us for the, you know, the Club Card loyalty program, because very, very few businesses can have people who are part of a loyalty program where over 80% of all of your sales actually come from your loyal Club Card customer base. So, you know, and I think it's because we don't take it for granted. To me personally, I consider it to be our single biggest asset, because what people, South Africans and across Southern Africa, they really value the Club Card in their wallet and they use it. You know, we continue to be the most used loyalty program in South Africa. So much for us to be eternally thankful for.
But, you know, you say that it might be the biggest asset in the Clicks portfolio. And I would actually disagree that that could potentially be a close second to the Clicks playground, because that seems to be ever growing in popularity. We'll come back to the playground in a second. I want to just look at the business's objectives at the moment. When we caught up last year, we were at 950 stores. As of August 2025, we were at 990. 1,000 stores is coming up any minute now, and I'm guessing it'll happen before next year's interim results, given how much you've deployed towards capital expenditure in the new financial year.
It's going to come between the end of November and the first 2 weeks in December. We will be at 1,000. Very confident of that.
That's a milestone in and of itself. I mean, for a business to have such a wide footprint in not only the healthcare and beauty space, but across some of your other portfolio assets as well. And perhaps let's look at those other portfolio assets. Take me through just the performance of the Unicare business that was recently added and the Sorbet business. That's been around for a bit longer than the Unicare business. How are those other assets performing within the portfolio?
I was asked a few years back by, you know, analysts, Bettina, are you changing the direction of the company? And I said no. One of the things you've always got to look out for as an executive team is where are the avenues of growth? And what you want to do is you don't want to go too far away from what the core of your business is. And that's where adjacencies to talk to the very strong capabilities of your organization and your competitive advantage in certain sectors become important. So for us, that is health and beauty. And you'd have seen that the investments that we have made have all been in health and beauty. All adjacencies. Now, why did we make those particular investments? First of all, in Sorbet, in terms of the intellectual property company, we always had 25% of equity. And what we wanted to do was to ensure that we were looking after all of the work that our private label team had done in terms of growing the Sorbet portfolio. It was also an area where, you know, we were under indexed in terms of the higher LSM customer. And of course, the sorbet customer, if you think about their basket value, it's generally sitting between 500 rand and 1,000 rand. And so, you know, they redeem back into Clicks. Secondly, is we made an investment in ARC. So if you walk around in the very, very liney areas of Sandton Mall and some of the large destination malls, you'll come across ARC. And what ARC is it's a premium, super premium beauty retail brand. And I'm talking about the Chanels, the Tom Fords, you know, the Fentys and the like. And so once again, it allows us to access that particular higher LSM customer. In our hands, sorbet has done better than they've ever done before. And I must say, I'm very, very pleased about the performance. So we've got a smallish equity stake in ARC, but their performance has been outstanding. I mean, they opened up the largest beauty store on the African continent a few weeks ago, now in October month, and people were queuing before 6 o'clock in the morning at Sandton City. So that just says to you, you know, they've already built an incredible following. And then if I look at Unicare, which is a 24-hour specialized pharmacy format, incredible performance. Their performance actually in the year has been better than that of Clicks from a sales point of view. And once again, you know, when something comes into our hands, we make the acquisition because we believe that we can add value and do better. The business can do better in our hands. And now we are set, Jimmy, having learned so much from the first sort of 18 months that we've held that business. We're going to be launching two new greenfield sites as well as two acquisitions before February next year.
Bettina, before I let you go, let's touch on that Clicks Playground becoming almost a cult-like following, for lack of a better phrase, but it speaks to the quality of what the Clicks business puts out, to have all of your brands in one location once a year for all of your consumers to enjoy. Clearly, this is something that consumers are absolutely loving and they can't seem to get enough of it. But more than that, I suppose it speaks to the loyalty towards the Clicks brand.
Absolutely. And what it does, it really cements our position as, you know, the leader in beauty. And that's what we want to stand for. But we make it an incredible event. You know, it's all of the different beauty suppliers that are there. And, you know, they all have fantastic stands where they've got people who educate. You know, we run masterclasses over that period. We've got entertainment. We've got great food. You know, we've got areas where people can take selfies. You know, we bring on board male grooming experts as well, you know, so that we don't leave the males out of it. And the quality of that goodie bag is absolutely phenomenal. It runs into the thousands of rands. So where we have disappointed the market and the customers, they want us to do many more of these. So, you know, I have asked the marketing team to maybe just do a complete review and for us to understand how could we be doing it differently? How could we ensure that many more people have access to our beauty playground events? You know, because the Gautengers are mad at us this year. The KZN people are mad at us because we've not yet done it there. So I think it's a question of watch the space. We're going to be looking to see how we can do this bigger and better. At the same time, you know, we've done Bro Nation a few months ago and an incredible response once again from the male customer in an area where they're really looking after male grooming. So much more that we can do, and that's what's exciting about having a business that isn't standing still, that is agile, that is constantly looking at how we can reinvigorate, renew ourselves. You know, we mustn't be stagnant.
An agile business looking to cement its name as the leader in beauty. That is what the Clicks Group business is focused on, and that is what will lead them to their 1,000th store being opened before the 2026 calendar year. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to the Chief Executive Officer of the Clicks Group, Bertina Engelbrecht, for joining us to take a look at the performance of the business and what lies ahead.
Time. When you're a kid, it moves slower than a sloth trying to get through airport security. There is just so much of it. Skip forward a few years to your 20s. Time is still your friend. It says have some balance. Go party and have fun. Then your 30s hit. And time suddenly steps on the accelerator like it's trying to catch a traffic light before it goes red. 40s. Now time is moving faster than your 10-year-old on a sugar high. 50. You're desperately trying to save as much as you can, but time is moving so fast. And all you can think is, where did all the time go? That's why after 50 years of investing, we've learned that time is the greatest gift of all. And the good news is, if you invest early, time gives you money. And then money gives you more time for some much-deserved you time. Now, isn't that a compelling enough reason to invest? Ellen Gray, long-term investing. Ellen Gray is an authorized FSP.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This feature is brought to you by the Standard Bank Group. The spending habits of young professionals is changing across South Africa because they are identifying that they have different needs and different outcomes that they would like for their own lives. We're going to be taking a look at this in a bit more detail with the head of youth and mass market clients at Standard Bank South Africa, Tsiamo Mulanda. She joins me on the line now to see what we make of some of these insights. Tsiamo, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. It seems as though the youth, particularly the professional youth that are earning their first paychecks, are starting to see the value of those paychecks and starting to make very, very interesting decisions around where they're spending their money.
Thank you so much for having me, and good evening to yourself and to all the listeners. So it has actually been quite an interesting report. And I think from my side, looking at this particular report and also looking at the youth barometer report that we took out in June this year, is actually quite great insights to bring them both together. So what is great, though, firstly, is that from a youth barometer report, it focuses more on the internal data that we have. And this particular one obviously then went out to the external kind of person. We were able to get that voice in. But the similarities have been on their spending patterns. So the things that we're seeing now is, as an example, a lot of spending on tech. We see a lot of spending on upgrading me. And so what you start seeing is that people are getting their first cars. They're starting to get their homes. Not to that large extent, but you see that coming through. And also some lending, some level of credit card coming through. But overall, which has been quite exciting to see, is that they're focusing on self in terms of how they're on their images, as well as from a health perspective. So we're seeing a lot of gym memberships coming through, as well as changing of brands as it relates to healthy eating.
Now, Tsiamo, you touched on the fact that some of the spend goes towards these first-time big-ticket items like vehicles and homes. We are still seeing, though, that some of the youth are electing to stay at home for a little bit longer and delay some of these purchases, probably, as you rightly mentioned, to focus on self and to focus on some of the other things that they might consider important. How is this sort of behavior affecting perhaps where young professionals might be allocating their spend?
So what we're seeing is that firstly, in terms of the average age of people buying homes, we see that shift from the age of 33 to about 37. But again, kind of being able to have a view of the both reports that I mentioned, is that while 74% of home loan inquiries are coming through are actually first time, are actually under the age of 35. What has been interesting, even though that's the case, the age buying is actually left to much later. And I think a lot of it supported by report is that people are focusing on home. What can I do to improve my parents' home? What can I do to actually build my parents a home? But also focusing, the reality of it is that from a cost of living is quite high. But a lot of these youth also are clearing the debt from student loans. And therefore, things like buying a home tends to kind of take a bit of a backseat while they actually try to repay their student, things like a student loan, and also focusing on investing on like their parents' homes. So those kind of the things, even though they are improving a lot on self. I think the other thing that we're seeing, and it's also supported by the June report, is that from a vehicle and asset finance or vehicle purchases perspective, we're seeing these youth actually buying cars, and it's all about I need to be able to show up at work early, because when I show up early, I can invest in my job and therefore I can do really well. So it's all about investing in self so that I can do well in terms of my current job.
Tiama, this obviously gives the Standard Bank Group some useful insights around what it is that is important to young professionals in today's day and age. And it obviously allows the business to then tailor products and tailor solutions for young professionals. How is Standard Bank leveraging this data to ensure that your products, as these young professionals come into their professional careers, continue to align with their personal goals?
So in the last couple of years, we've actually been quite a lot of focus in terms of what the things that we're doing for youth. So this type of data and research, what it does is that it allows us to put it back into the system in terms of updating our products and services. So there's been quite a lot of work in terms of, from a rewards perspective, as an example, in terms of who we partner with. So as an example, our partnership with Varsity Vibe and the type of deals that we bring on is as a result of these kind of research. Also, from a professional banking perspective, it has allowed us to improve our proposition. So we're using all of this to actually update our products and services.
Tiama, is this leading to Standard Bank offering more practicality in its solutions? I mean, it seems as though from the data, the spend of the youth is geared towards reflecting an element of practicality, one that we perhaps haven't seen before.
100%. So I'm not going to let the cat out of the bag yet, but there's a few things that will be coming out later on this month, as well as into the next month, where we're starting to address a lot of those needs in terms of the youth. And what is great about it is that we've continuously updating our products and services so that we can speak to the youth. So as an example, if you look at the type of things that we've introduced on our mobile device in terms of gaming vouchers and kind of vouchers that speaks to the needs of the youth, is really around taking these insights so that we can actually update our products and services.
Reimagining how young professionals are being catered for and taken care of, some very useful insights from the First 100 Paychecks report that Standard Bank is using to service its youth market as we go into the new year. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to Tiama Molanda, who is the head of youth and mass market clients at Standard Bank South Africa, for joining us to take a look at the First 100 Paychecks report and the useful insights that have come out of it. This feature was brought to you by the Standard Bank Group.
When you're growing your money, you need to make the right choices. That's why at Standard Bank Private, we offer the best of everything. Our offshore investments are award-winning. We'll give you the best forex rates around. As SA's biggest home loan provider, we offer unmatched expertise. And you'll have access to the best financial planners and bankers. So why not visit standardbank.co.za to join Africa's best private bank today? Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Afrimat Limited was another one of the JSE-listed companies that released their interim results for the period 31 August 2025. Today, an update on the first 6 months of their financial year. We're joined on the line by the executive director at Afrimat, Colin Ramakubati, to take a look at this and see what to make of it. Colin, lovely to have you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. It seems as though the business has had quite the strong start to the new financial year. Group revenues up almost 30%. Headline earnings per share increasing quite significantly as well. The business starting off the year on the right foot.
Yeah. Firstly, good evening, Jimmy, to you, listeners, SFM, and thank you for having me. And you're absolutely right. We're quite satisfied with the results. Although the first quarter was not a great start, but I think the second quarter really came up better than the first quarter, and we ended up in this results that we have now. And we really, really quite satisfied that our diversification strategy is really, really going well.
Colin, let's go through some of the business environment that Afrimat finds itself in. I mean, a business the size of Afrimat operates across quite the geographical area, but that also means then that there's a lot that goes into your business and into some of the projects that you guys get involved in. Take me through just how the business's operations are running at the moment, and if you're seeing perhaps some improvements in some areas or some slowdowns in some others.
Yeah, fantastic. It's quite a diverse portfolio, which I'll start with the star of the first half, which has been our iron ore business. Iron ore business has had a very fantastic first half because of the strong recovery from the previous year, where we've seen both our local sales and international sales performed well. Especially domestic sales, we've seen them doubling from the previous year, more than double from the previous year. As you will remember, last year we had a freeze on the finance of our customers, which really set us back. But this year, we've seen the numbers coming up well. And then the international line or export line has also been doing well, thanks to Transnet, who's really been doing their best to really turn things around in the rail. And we've seen that improving year on year, although we're not yet on our full capacity, but we're quite happy with the performance on the first half on the iron ore. And then the next business is the aggregate business, which is our quarries. And this has really been the positive contributions from the Lafarge quarries, which have well been integrated into the business, and as well of the efficiency drive that we've embarked on, which we have seen in our existing quarries doing well. So all in all, we've seen a nice growth where we've seen most of our ex-Lafarge quarries, which are large ones, as we've been investing and giving them the right kit to really, you know, able to fight back and claw the market share that business lost in the last couple of years. We've seen a nice recovery on that. And then our own quarries, we've seen that doing well. And we are fortunate that our aggregates now, we've got 43 quarries, which are all over the country. And almost in every province, we've got a quarry. So firstly, again, going back to Transnet, you know, whenever Transnet does well, it's not only on our iron ore business, but also on their ballast and the formation layer works that they do in terms of maintaining of the line. Then we normally tend to benefit from the ballast sales there, which we've seen that doing well. The KZN N2, N3 road construction there, it's continuing to do well. Western Cape, it's also been continuing to be strong in terms of the sales there. Northern KZN, we're starting to see some nice orders coming through as well in terms of the Department of Transport. And then Mpumalanga has also been another area that has really been done. So all in all, we are very, very happy with aggregates, and we believe this performance will continue probably in the rest of the year and probably towards the new year.
Colin, give us an update on the state of the anthracite business and the cement business. Both those businesses have seen their fair share of challenges, and we'd just like to get a sense of where they are at the moment.
The anthracite business, as you are aware, that we supply the ferrochrome smelters, and our biggest customer announced in July that they were shutting down their ferrochrome smelters, and almost all of the smelters in the country were shut, which really brought our sales to a grinding halt. But that obviously has now made us to focus internationally to look at more clients out internationally. And so we are busy working hard to see that business coming back again from the international sales. The cement business, another business that's really struggled, although we're quite pleased with the improvements that we're expecting there. It's not going as quickly as we would have loved it to be. As you remember, it's been a loss-making when we took it over. The business or the plant was neglected, the Lichtenberg plant. It was in a bad or terrible state. We've put the best engineers we can in the company with our team, with the existing guys that are there, are really working hard to turn that business around. And we're quite pleased of the improvements that, as we speak now, we are now seeing a break-even, and which we've also catch all those the losses there. So we believe going forward, you know, the improvements will continue, and we'll see the efficiencies improving going forward. And lastly, industrial mineral, I think it's another business. It's a small business in our portfolio, but it was also affected by the ferrochrome smelters and also by the shut of AMSA, of the Newcastle plant there. And so that business, we are again refocusing it to agricultural products and construction material side of the business.
Colin, are you optimistic about the operating environment going into the second half of the financial year? The infrastructure development goals that we have at a national level start to filter through into regional and provincial levels, and I imagine AfriMat is very involved in various projects across that ecosystem. Are you optimistic about the pipeline going into the second half of the year?
Jimmy, I mean, look, we still don't see that big infrastructure drive yet. We've heard the talks. We've heard the president talking about the want to create a country construction site. But we haven't seen that yet. You know, most of the projects that were involved, it's stuff that's been going on for the last 2-3 years. You know, that's just now come into fruition now. And we are cautiously optimistic, you know. I mean, 1 minute, you know, you'll be happy, and the next thing you hear, like, AMSA is shutting down a portion of the, which we didn't see that coming. And then the next minute, we have now had the ferrochrome smelter shutting down because of the cost of electricity and the other factors. So we are cautiously, and we would like to see that infrastructure boom, because we know that we have set well for that. I mean, we believe our construction material business has benefited just from recovering from its lost market share mostly, you know. It's not even yet from the new stuff that we're looking at. But we know there's few things that's on the pipelines. We know where, in terms of the airports that's coming in the north, in the Western Cape. We know about the Huguenot Tunnel that's coming out there. So, yeah, we would love to see that happening, you know. We are proudly South African. We urge our president and his team to really put the money where their mouth is and to see this drive.
Cautiously optimistic about the second half of the year and eagerly awaiting the infrastructure drive to kick in. That is the message from AfriMat Limited as they conclude their first half of their financial year and focus on what lies ahead for the business.
I think the family needs a break. We've always wanted a holiday home. Maybe we should see what's out there. Imagine waking up to an ocean view in a beautiful villa.
With a big braai area and a spare room for when family visits. If it's on your mind, it's on ours. Partner with a wealth banker will connect you to a home loan with up to prime minus 1.5%. See money differently. Nedbank Private Wealth. We're licensed FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This interview is brought to you by SAB, 130 years of being committed to South Africa. We're taking a look at the world of the beer industry, particularly focusing on the excise tax that the beer industry faces, as well as the challenges around illicit trade that provide some interesting insights into what the beer industry would potentially look like and what we need to be doing to protect it. I'm joined on the line by Senior Excise Tax and Public Policy Manager at SAB, Fatsani Banda, to take a look at this and see what to make of it. Fatsani, lovely to catch up again. Lovely to have you back on the show. SAB recently put together a submission for Parliament's Portfolio Committee on Finance, looking at the impact of the excise tax. Now, we know this is a tax that gets announced by the Minister of Finance in the budget speech every year. And for some, or for the last couple of years, it's been increasing at quite an alarming rate, even above inflation. Tell us about just the impact that excise tax has on not just your business, but on the beer industry as a whole.
Well, thank you for having me, and thanks for the listeners that are tuning in. Well, excise taxes remains the highest cost to the beer industry, and we have been engaging for at least 5 budget cycles with not only the Standing Committee of Finance, as you heard during Parliament, but with National Treasury, asking to keep excise taxes in line with the current excise policy that says that this should be in line with projected inflation. What we have seen as a long-term trend is that over the last 11 years at least, only in two instances has that excise tax increase been in line with inflation and in line with the excise policy guidelines. So what we've experienced is that essentially we are not able to business plan because we have more than a policy requirement annually when we see the Minister of Finance table the excise adjustment. So what we've been essentially asking the Standing Committee of Finance and while going on the tax bills that are tabled by the Minister is that in order to have the short-term ability to plan appropriately and the medium-term to long-term ability to invest, we really need excise taxes to be in line with inflation.
Fatani, now the excise policy is currently under review and one hopes that some of the considerations and some of the submissions that the beer industry is putting forward will be taken into account when this review is concluded. Can we just get a sense from at least SAB's perspective what it is you're doing from a strategic point of view in preparation of potential outcomes? I mean, in the event that the policy is reviewed favorably, yes, that's a great thing for the business, but in the event that we come back and the increases continue at the rate at which they've been going on, surely the business has thought around these different scenarios and how to move forward.
So look, at the end of the day, the biggest loss to the government and to South Africa as a whole is to have a legal industry being really constrained by the tax environment due to adverse or a highly punitive tax changes. So what we've really said in the current excise policy review is to say we have an opportunity as the government to, of course, make systemic changes to the excise environment that do improve it, that do increase its efficiencies, but there must be a calculated and substantive view into what may occur as an adverse response to the growth in the illicit market. We have provided research by Euromonitor released last year showing that at least one in every five bottles of alcohol on the shelves or existing in the market, rather, is illicit alcohol. And that doesn't need to be exacerbated by any tax policy options or tax changes through excise in particular that may put under pressure the consumer to think it is better to choose an illicit alcohol product than a legal alcohol product. So our view is to insist on having a really an empirical evidence-based approach when thinking through the excise tax policy and the changes, and to really think about protecting the legal tax industry from the growing and existing presence of the illicit alcohol market.
Fatani, let's stick with that illicit market for a second. We know the severe impact it has, as you said, on the legal market and on legal businesses, but from a government perspective, what would you hope as the beer industry that the government would put in place to alleviate the pressure that it creates? Because it affects margins, it affects profitability, it affects safety of consumers, not knowing what is put into the product as well. How do we hope that government intervention could potentially alleviate this problem?
Well, historically, the beer industry in particular has sought to collaborate both technically and through enforcement with the South African Revenue Service and the South African Police Service to really put in place levers and, you know, tip-offs to really, you know, reduce the presence of syndicates, not only in the manufacturing side, but allow retailers and consumers to be able to identify products that are illicit. So we've been extensively involved in that, but there hasn't been enough resourcing in that regard. And there aren't enough laws in place that disincentivize manufacturers from continuing to form syndicates that produce illicit alcohol. So there are many technical and legal elements that we have put on the table in that regard. But in terms of taxes, I think there is a call in general for the evading of taxes by illicit businesses. And the differential between those that evade and those that actually put legal alcohol on the shelves of the alcohol market, that differential can create a price differential that is between 33% and 43%. So consumers that are very cash-strapped in an environment where inflation is still coming down, there seems to be more incentive to go for illicit than legal. And the tax environment shouldn't be sending those signals to consumers or to the market. So we insist that the tax policy, any changes thereof, should be in line with keeping consumers legal and keeping the manufacturers, at least the legal ones, being able to have a conducive tax environment so that we don't induce the growth in illicit alcohol.
Fatani, could the tax environment be utilized as a measure of deterrence? I mean, I'm sure this is in the submission that was put forward to the Portfolio Committee on Finance, but could we look at perhaps saying for an illicit market, perhaps that market should be taxed at a higher, more punitive rate such that it discourages involvement in illicit activity entirely? Surely that is something that is within the purview of the government and by extension, I suppose, the South African Revenue Services.
Of course, but anything illicit doesn't pay any taxes. VAT, they don't pay value-added taxes, they don't pay corporate income taxes, they don't pay excise taxes. So anybody that's operating illegally is only charging the consumer the price that they deem the consumer is willing to pay for that said product. So any legal beer that you see on the shelf is paying VAT and is paying excise taxes, hence the price is higher. There is no way to tax illegal alcohol except to close down syndicates. But if you encourage manufacturers that are coming into the beer industry by saying, look, it's better to not pay the higher excise tax because only some businesses should pay that, then there is no incentive to become legal. And that's why I think the tax environment should be enabling to encourage more legal manufacturers to pay taxes rather than disincentivize them from doing so. And evading tax and tax compliance shouldn't be the status quo or the next rule. So we think that the tax environment should be enabling to encourage more legal manufacturers than to actually discourage people from actually paying the taxes and evading the cost they should pay to the government in that regard.
Enabling environments to protect the beer industry, that is what the call from SAB is to the government of South Africa, at least in their latest submission to the Standing Committee of Standing Committee on Finance around the excise tax and regulation of the beer industry. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to Fatsani Banda for joining us to give us a sense of what it is that is required to potentially protect the beer industry from illicit trade and excessive taxation. This interview was brought to you by SAB, 130 years of being committed to South Africa.
Commitment is not just brewing beer, it's brewing hope. It's brewing dreams.
It's brewing a legacy. For over a century, believing in something bigger. Commitment is brewing a promise to step up when the nation calls. To brew moments that matter, that bring us together. For you, for the next generation, for 130 years and forever. SAB, forever committed to a future with more cheers.
South Africa, be sharp. Not for persons under the age of 18.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
SME of the Week is powered by Capitec Business Banking. Start out or scale up with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP, FSP number 46669. Terms and conditions apply. It's SME of the Week time. We are getting to know a small business a little bit better, spotlighting them and showcasing them to you, our SAFM community, and hopefully we can help that business do a little bit better through this conversation. This week's SME is a company called Stub. I'm joined on the line by the company's co-founder and CEO, Taylor Dandridge, to get to know her business a little bit better. Taylor, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Tell us about Stub. What is it that you guys do?
Thanks so much, Jimmy. It's great to be here, and I'm looking forward to catching up. Stub, in a nutshell, builds super simple accounting for everyday entrepreneurs. So we're here really to simplify a small business's finances and to ensure that they know exactly what's going on in their business at any point in time.
Now, Taylor, when you say small business, South Africa has quite the large micro business sector and informal sector. How small a business are we talking here? Are we talking sole proprietor businesses, spaza shops? What kind of market do you guys service?
That's a great question, Jimmy. So I think from a target focus perspective, we specifically focus at the moment on your small businesses. So very much your sole props, micro businesses, one man bands. So everyone who's just starting out. We do service entrepreneurs across sectors. So we've got everyone from professional services businesses. So if you think of your freelancers or anyone providing a service to the market, we serve them. And then we do have a couple of spazas and taverns that have come on and have started to use Stub through some of our partnerships.
Now, Taylor, when you say you're an accounting software, take us through what that means, because that's distinctly different from something like a point of sale system, but it doesn't necessarily mean you can't incorporate something like a point of sale system. What exactly does your system or your software offer entrepreneurs?
100%. So Jimmy, how we like to think about our service from a value perspective is predominantly focused around insights and helping a small business understand what's going on in their business. So that's everything from understanding your profit for the month, your profit for the year, where your money's coming from, where your money's going, how much cash has come into your business this month, and how much cash has left your business this month. So we often challenge the narrative around what is accounting. And for us, it's really understanding what's going on in your business. So that's the service we provide to small businesses.
And I suppose that service is very beneficial when you need to file your tax returns at the end of the financial year. Taylor, from a Coftwares, typically can be quite expensive. And we know that small businesses in most cases can't afford to spend money on these softwares, even though they are essential towards running businesses and keeping track of the numbers. Where do you guys come in from a price point of view, and how does that stack up to perhaps what might be out there in the market?
100%. So I think accessibility for us at Stub was a massive deal, and we wanted to make sure that every entrepreneur had access to tools that they needed to build successful businesses. That was key when we started out, to make sure that that was something that we could achieve. So at the moment, Stub is a subscription-based business where we charge a monthly fee. From a positioning in the market perspective, we are incredibly competitive, and we come in at the sort of entry level from a plan perspective. We've also currently got a free plan in the market, which just makes sure that even when you're still starting out, there's no reason for you to start managing your finances from the get-go.
Taylor, you guys recently announced a significant collaboration with one of the biggest banks in South Africa in the form of Capitec Bank. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we're incredibly excited around the collaboration with Capitec. I mean, from an accessibility perspective, they're serving such a significant portion of the market at the moment. It's really a big milestone for us. From an integration perspective, we've built a direct integration into their personal or retail segment to try and support those entrepreneurs that are still operating in their personal bank accounts.
Taylor, how many entrepreneurs are you supporting at the moment through the Stub software?
So we're currently serving around 4,000 entrepreneurs since we launched in 2023. So growing nicely, but still lots of entrepreneurs to support.
What does growth look like for you as a business? Where would you like to see the Stub software grow to?
So the next 6 to 12 months is predominantly focused on the South African market and how do we serve as many entrepreneurs as possible and make sure that every South African entrepreneur has access to financial insight around their business. That's a key goal for us as a business at Stub. And then I think post 12 months, the world's our oyster. I think when you're building a software business, opportunity definitely crosses border, which is very exciting for us at the right time.
So Taylor, tell everybody where they can get hold of the business. If entrepreneurs are out there listening to this conversation and they would love to get the Stub software into their businesses because it will improve their businesses, how do they get hold of you? Where is all of the contact information and how can they find you?
Definitely, Freddie. So I think the best thing to do is to go to stub.africa. That's STUB.africa. And you can sign up there and the team on the chat functionality 24/7.
Stub, the accounting software you could potentially incorporate into your business. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to Taylor Dandridge, the co-founder and CEO of Stub, for joining us for this week's SME. Inspired by the SME of the week? Start your own business or scale up and save up to 50% on fees with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP, FSP number 46669. Terms and conditions apply.
That's the sound of your business growing. Whether you're starting out or scaling up, turn your passion into profit with Capitec Business Banking. Save up to 50% on fees. Get fast credit approvals, personalized support, and Forex for your business. Open your business banking account on our app. Bank on better with Capitec, the business bank for everyone.
HappyTech is an authorized FSP. 46669. T's and C's apply.
It's just gone 7 o'clock. Chanduko Legege and the SAFM news team are standing by to give you the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the Top Sport team. From my side, good night.